Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Yo, 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 it's Eddie Schumard coming to you live from the Heritage Radio Network studios in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, behind Roberta's. You're listening to a special community session. Today I'm super hyped because I have in studios with me my old bosses, my good friends, my mentor in the kitchen, Mr. Greg Baker and Miss Michelle Baker of the Refinery in Tampa, Florida. Thanks for being here, guys.
Oh, yeah, nobody can hear me wave. Okay, that's right.
Hi, Eddie. Hi.
I know. First, what are you guys doing in New York City?
Oh, what are you doing in New York City?
You know, stuff.
Yes, you guys, it really was like this in the kitchen back in the day when Eddie, and it was just Eddie and Greg at the Refinery.
Yes, we should probably do full disclosure. I worked for Greg and Michelle Baker at the Refinery in Tampa. It was a beautiful, beautiful time, Greg and I, sweating it out on the line.
All questions were answered with questions.
That's true.
So I know all about the Refinery, but you know, some of our listeners might not. If they don't, well, then they're missing out. But give everybody sort of an idea of what the Refinery is, what you guys do there. Give us a little bit of the backstory.
Well, the Refinery is a tiny little place in a converted 1920s carriage house. Our mission, so to speak, is really to bring good and good-for-you food to a level of sophistication of fine dining at a price point where the average person can't afford it. Our latest slogan is, "Where's the place at the table for folks like us?"
Which is a song, it's a line from a song by a band called Slobberbone. They're based mostly out of Texas, but it's Placemat Blues is the title of that song.
Largely just taking all the everything that's good about upscale dining and stripping of all of its edifices and just bringing it down to being something real and that just stands on the food, not on pretense.
Right. You know, and when you guys opened the Refinery, there was a lot of, you know, Florida, and you know, there's some good chefs down there, and there was some stuff happening, but there was a lot of people that we knew when we were talking about opening the Refinery and what you guys wanted to do, and they're like, is Tampa ready for this? So, like, how has the market changed since then? You know, what's going on in Florida? Because I feel like, you know, since the Refinery opened, things have really sort of kind of opened up a little bit.
So what we did was we found this crazy motherfucker called Eddie Schumard. And we said, Eddie, can you find some farms that we can buy from? Because that life doesn't exist here in the Tampa Bay area. And Eddie, being crazy as he is, found John Matthews, Suncoast Food Alliance. So, as you know, Eddie, when you guys first started buying, like, we were trying to scrape together orders and stuff like that for John to deliver out to the restaurants. And now, and we were barely making the minimums, and we were barely bringing people through the door. And the customers, they didn't quite get what we were doing. They didn't understand that, you know, avocados and limes were not available right now because that's what they wanted. And then all of a sudden, fast forward 3.5 years later, and the public is so educated about, we don't have that right now. I'm sorry, we don't have any lemons for your iced tea because we don't have any lemons from our farmers right now.
Right.
And they get it. And now they want it. And they respect it. And they get excited about meeting the farmers and knowing who the farmers are now.
Yeah, Greg, you just did, well, both of you guys did, but you guys just did a farm tour with John like a few weeks back, right?
Toward what, three of the farms in his network.
So, I mean, you know, you change the menu every week, which is a daunting task in itself.
As you know.
As I know, sitting down Tuesday, sometimes hungover, trying to be really creative about what you're going to make. But, like, you know, how do those relationships with the farms influence what's going on the menu? And how has that relationship grown to a point where you come up with an idea and then you ask the farmer to sort of produce for you?
Well, that last part really comes into play in our newest project, which is a restaurant that will be opening late winter called Fodder and Shine. In what we're doing there is we've researched heritage crops of Florida and tried to find people to grow them for us. You know, many of these things have just died out because they've been substituted with, oh, this has better yield per acre, this has, you know, this one. But these are things that historically have grown from the earliest settlers. Some were native, some were bought in, but these are the things that thrive, the things that defined the food culture of Florida back, you know, pre-Civil War. And we're now working with a handful of farmers to bring back the, you know, to specifically grow these ingredients for us, such as like odd varieties of okras and bush beans and Malabar spinach. That they look at me and say,
"You really want that?
You want Malabar?"
Yeah. You're like, "Yeah, a really slimy one." Yeah. If you're not sure, it looks really bumpy and like, "Oh, it's gonna be that's slimy." Yeah. I want to touch on the heritage foods part, one, because we're on Heritage Radio Network and it fits really nicely with our parent company, Heritage Foods USA. But, you know, because I'm fascinated with foodways, and I know that one of my favorite things is like really old cookbooks and looking at those old recipes and trying to like bring them back. So with Fodder and Shine and focusing on heritage foods, Floridian centric foods, is it about just the food or is it like food and food ways? Because there's a certain, I feel like there's a mentality both at the refiner, like where's the place at the table for us? Like this is food for everybody. I think one of your great quotes is, fine dining. What is it?
You know, good food's wasted on the people who can afford it.
Yes, he says it much better than I do. But is it food and food ways, or is it really just like this fascination with that? This like food that is no longer around.
Food and food ways, I would say. The more that we can connect, the more that we can connect our people with their food and where their food has come from and the face of the person who has grown the food and how that food has defined culture, how that food is, it's the question of, you know, does art follow culture or culture follow art, blah, blah, blah. Same thing with food. You know, people have to eat. Let's look at the way that people's lives changed simply from trying to stay alive.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what drew you, because you've lived in some really, you know, badass cities across the country, you've cooked in a lot of them, you played music in a lot of them. Why Florida and why the fascination sort of with this
old world cuisine of Florida?
the swamp planet, as we sometimes call it.
Swamp planet, I was totally just going to say swamp. Welcome to Swamp Planet.
Well, on the swamp planet of Tampa, it's just a 9 months out of the year, we live in paradise. Well, maybe. Well, okay, that's conservatively 7 or 8.
I was going to say, you're kind of pushing it there, buddy. Let's not boldly lie.
I'm trying to whitewash it here, okay?
We are trying to steal all the Patti Smiths from Brooklyn down to Tampa. Oh, you didn't think I was going to not let that in?
Oh, yeah, we're trying to totally fuck their shit up.
Yeah. But
yeah. So that's the reference to the, what's her name, Lena Dunham's silly comment about Patti Smith being... What if Patti Smith was from Tampa? Well, she's from New Jersey, so misquote.
We both have lived in many different places and absorbed a lot of different things, but Tampa has, and the Tampa area has always been home to us. We just keep coming back, and I have this knack for leaving cities just as they start blowing up.
Every time.
I left Portland after working there for years and, you know, really helping put Portland on the map, and within a year it was, hey, look, this is the new foodie destination.
Right.
Austin, the same thing. I mean, that was even less than a year. It was like 6 months after we left. All of a sudden, food started blowing up. All of you.
But you're sticking with it in Tampa. You're not going.
Tampa is home. We're not leaving. I have a track record that I wish to break here. And there's some really exciting things coming in the pipe as far as what's happening in the Tampa food scene. And
yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit because the Refinery is in a great neighborhood in Seminole Heights, which has a lot of Brooklyn leanings. It's been described by some as Brooklyn-esque.
Where hipster meets home invasion.
Yes, absolutely. But there's a lot of really great community building in that neighborhood and a lot of really great restaurants and bars opening up. And I know you guys have such a great relationship with them. How important is it to like build those personal relationships with the other owners, the other chefs? And do you guys feel sort of, in like a the Papa and Mama Bear of the scene, or is it like a real sort of?
I'm not going to be as bold as to say we're the Papa and the Mama Bear of the scene by any means, because our friends at the Independent, which is this awesome import beer bar, they were there, and the guy over at Scooter who opened Cappy's, this cool little hipster pizza place, and then the folks at Ella's, Ernie and Melissa, who are phenomenal people, they were there before us. So we're not going to call it the Mom and the Pop Bear. Yeah, great. Greg did put it on maybe a national map, the national isn't making your doors stay open. You got to think about your local people. And I think for all of us, as far as like the business side of it, we just all got along before. We're all from the community, and we weren't going to look at each other and not like each other just because we had businesses nearby. And then we thought, you know what? Wow. It's cheaper to split ads than to pay for individual ads. And that's where we all kind of got together and said, hey, let's start doing a lot of this stuff together. And so we created a sense of a community, and then the next thing you know, and that kind of turned the marketing and the media industry in the Tampa Bay area upside down. They're like, well, what do you mean you're going to be doing this together? That doesn't make any sense. Isn't that your competition? We're like, no, it's not. There's plenty of stuff to go around, and they're not our competition. So as a byproduct of that, what happened was we as a whole put Seminole Heights as a new name that everybody knew. People now in the surrounding counties. So for all you in New York City, the Tampa Bay area is very much so like how everybody considered when you say New York City. You got these, boroughs. You've got Brooklyn and you've got Manhattan. Well, when people say the Tampa Bay area, you've got the surrounding cities. You've got St. Pete and Clearwater and Sarasota and Tampa. And so all of a sudden, everybody knew where this little neighborhood, Seminole Heights, was. Mm-hmm. And that, I really contribute to all of us as business owners just liking each other and getting along and saying, hey, we can, take all of our resources and put them together and have a bigger buying power and help promote our little neighborhood.
Yeah.
I kind of by default or complete accident, the area has just become sort of an incubator for things that are progressive for the area. I mean, people in the neighborhood have stood and fought with city council just to be allowed to start the first community garden in Tampa, which I'm sure you mm-hmm. can comment on much better than I can. But it's, I'm trying to figure out where I was going with that.
I saw it too. It was like fluttered away like a butterfly.
It was really cool.
It's just bye-bye.
I mean, we're going to take a quick break in a little bit, but I wanted to sort of talk about chef is like leaders and like messages within, like being
the
a chef.
The new rock star.
Because, but you guys have sort of always been like sort of local celebrities in Tampa. I mean, I would say that. I could stand behind that statement. And there's a point where, especially when you bring like a little bit of a national spotlight, actually quite a bit of a national spotlight, putting Tampa on a map with 3 James Beard nominations in the first 3 years of the Refinery, that's a big deal. What do you feel as like a responsibility as a chef to like educate customers about, say, farmers and where their food comes from and supporting communities and supporting community garden efforts? I mean, do you think that's a role that chefs are obliged to do, or is that something that you do as a personal
I think that it's okay. From the, as you know, from the get go, our intention was to change the Tampa Bay area because what the refinery didn't exist. And meaning nobody was doing what we were doing, and we wanted people to copy this. And I have proven that by now having provided the refinery business plan to two separate individuals so that they could go forth and copy the exact structure of this. So in getting into that without talking into giant circles before we have to go to break, it's a byproduct. It's like, wow, okay, you've got the social responsibility on your sitting on your shoulders. Well, you know what? Why not do some good with it? Why not stand up for the, you know, migrant farm workers in Immokalee, Florida, who, I mean, might as well consider it modern slavery. Why not get with all the kids in the rural areas who, you know, these adults have taken their time and invested hours and hours to create these culinary clubs so these kids can become chefs, and really had said, no, you know what? There's this guy, Greg Baker. He's doing really awesome things, and we want you to learn from him, because then that educates them, and it creates a new breed, if you will, of chefs coming in and staying away from going to the high dollar paychecks of the corporate world.
Right. We want to stay away from there.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We've been talking to Greg Baker and Michelle Baker, the refinery in Tampa. When we come back, we're going to keep talking about chefs' responsibilities to lead in the community. Thanks for listening. This is Eddie Shumard, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Leaving by Dead Stars on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from Eddie Shumard and the refinery. Following is an actor reading an actual customer email from Heritage Foods USA.
My family and I enjoyed the Heritage turkey. It was far superior to the regular mass-produced turkeys in terms of flavor and texture. Absolutely delicious and worth the difference in price. We will never go back to the regular turkeys. It made our holidays more enjoyable. Thank you, Heritage Foods USA.
Heritage Foods USA hopes you had a great holiday season. For more specials on pork, beef, and other meats, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.
Yo, we're back in studios with Michelle and Greg Baker of the refinery in Tampa. We also have, excuse me, another friend from Tampa in studios. I'm going to call you out, Cameron, who is now, is this, we can make a public announcement?
No,
public announcement. Cameron is intimately involved with Greg and Michelle. That sounded weird.
That is
that's gross.
Not at all the public announcement whatsoever that we even want to kind of think about.
He's a buddy. He's in studios with us, too. What's going on, Cameron?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm good.
Good to see you, buddy.
Just hanging out. It's good to see you. So many Florida people in town this week. It's great.
Yeah, it was really strange. I mean, literally, there's like 10 tampons in New York City right now. And they're coming out of the woodworks everywhere. We just ran into Cameron. We're like, come on, dude. We're going to go see Eddie.
Greg, we ate at the Whiskey Soda Lounge, Andy Ricker's Whiskey Soda Lounge, because we attempted to go to Pock Pock. But as often happens in New York at Pock Pock, there is a line down the block.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. Wings were amazing, though.
And Greg isn't famous by any means, so we couldn't be like the whole like push the chef up to the hostess station and be like,
apparently you don't know who I am.
But we were eating the fish sausage wings, and we had, what, the fried anchovies?
Yeah.
An epiphany happened.
Yes,
folks.
An epiphany. Greg, what was that epiphany?
It's the seventh flavor. Fish mommy.
It's, oh, Cameron, he gets exact. See, we don't even have to explain it, though, do we, Cameron?
No,
you get it.
Absolutely not.
Because
I totally get it.
It's a really interesting
fish mommy
thing with fish, and especially sort of like cured, dried fishes. And I know you were just making house-made Botarga?
Yeah, house-made Botarga and some salt mullet rather than
fish
baccarat.
Mommy.
Yeah, so how, what, tell me about that process. Like, one, why would you want to do it in-house?
I know why. This is more for the listeners.
And two, how did you do it?
Well, why is because I could. It's for the craft. It's just to see what you're never going to find an immersion circulator in my kitchen. I'm more interested in the old food ways.
I'm going to correct you there for a second. Actually, you did once have an immersion circulator, that which I believe Mr. Schumard designed himself.
He did buy it, did build it, yes, out of a hand mixer and a steam table.
And wasn't there some kind of duct tape and cardboard involved
there was,
as well?
As well, any project like that, you should have duct tape and cardboard.
I'm sorry to have interrupted.
Okay, so back to Botarga. I was handed a good amount of mullet roes from a mullet fishing enthusiast, and it really requires two ingredients: salt and sun. We've got plenty of both in Florida, so off to the roof I went with the mullet roe. And a week later, we had Botarga, and plenty of fish mommy.
Plenty of fish mommy. Is there where is that Botarga going? Do you know yet? Is there a plan for it? Is it like, oh, we got Botarga in the back of our pockets now?
Well, I was wearing it on literally. My belt. Such was the style back in the day.
I've got to trade you a sack of Botarga for your donkey.
Oh, and yeah, this is why we never really became anything. This is why we could never handle sleeping very well, I think, back in the day when the two of you were in the kitchen. It was like, I mean, everybody just walked away red-faced because they could never get a clear answer from either one of you about anything. You would just start throwing accents and start talking to each other.
Hi, y'all. That's a good one.
Yeah, the Paula Deen one.
Oh, that's fallen so far from grace at this point, though.
I know. She got a little... Yeah. We won't go into it.
So anyway, yeah, there is a destination for the Botarga, but I can't tell you.
Well, then let's talk about fodder and chum a little bit.
That's so rude.
Well, he could tell you, but he would have to kill you.
Right, exactly.
And
I thought we were going to get whacked when we were rolling up here.
Beautiful bushwhack.
We were going through a junkyard covered in...
Greg literally asked the driver, are we going to get whacked out here?
Possibly. Fodder and Shine.
Fodder and Shine.
Second restaurant in the works. It all focused on the heritage foods of Florida. Is there any other message in there? Or is it just like, because you pick like heritage foods and you want to focus on like this Florida thing. Is it just like, that's a cool thing. I'm into these flavors. I think it's fun and I think it would work as a restaurant. Or is it more... like, I want people to get something out of this. Like, I want them to think a little bit deeper.
Yes.
to all of the above.
I want people to get something out of this. I think it's fun food to cook. I think it's everything that's been mentioned here. I want to connect people with the history of Florida through food.
Which a lot of people don't know much about other than that swamp planet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've got a lot more going on than, being the brunt of just about every joke in the world. But
with alien Governor Rick Scott, it's
kind
of
Skeletor
easy.
Is
he owns, like, I'm going to be crazy and I'm going to look crazy. Like, there's no confusion about Rick Scott's craziness.
What the fuck is a train?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
We digress.
As always. Yeah. And so, yes, connecting people with what Florida was and really is at its heart. Also, I'm going to look at it this way. It's like, Thomas Keller and Daniel Boulud have already done what they do. I'm not going to be that fine dining chef that goes through and makes his name by creating something to the best of the best of everything. What I want to do is create the best of what I do, and right. which is really just over the last several years of really devolved, I guess, into researching old styles of cooking and trying to bring those back, rather than
things that are almost lost.
Rather than relying on the laboratory, relying on the fire out back and the spit and the.
It's interesting that you put it that way because, you know, over the past few years we've seen, like, you know, starting with like the front Adrians and the. That techno-emotional, we're going to, like, go to the science of it. We're going to, like, think to the future. It's postmodern food. But then there was this backlash to a certain extent where people were like, wait a second, like, who the fuck cares? Like, you got some science going, like, does it taste good?
Yeah.
You know, thinking, like, how...
We've put some breath and skin on a plate
right,
for
you. So cooking and craft, like, why is that important? Why does it do the thing you do? Why are you drawn to it?
You know, and Greg, before you start too, it's not to say, like, you know, what those guys are doing. Like,
no,
it's cool,
absolutely not.
It's fine, it's art. You know, I remember back in the day, like, when you and Greg would, like, talk about, you know, the technique behind it. And it was definitely, you know, there's definitely a skill behind it. And I know the two of you personally, that you both appreciate it. So it's not to add any insult to somebody who's into it.
No.
But it's definitely never been either of your games, ever. And I think I know that both of you have stated, why are you going to put the chemicals back in the food? We're trying to take them out.
Right.
Yeah.
Craft.
Why were we drawn to this craft? Well, number one, I don't know how to do anything else. I love feeding people. You know, there's a serious instant gratification that comes from, I've just provided you something that I think is really wonderful. You think so too? Great. You know, enjoy. You know, there's a communality, whether or not it is a business transaction that's occurring that, you know, something that we have done has done something to make a positive impact in that person's day through giving them something delicious.
And is it just, like, infinitely more satisfying when you've kind of made it all the way from scratch?
I just don't see how you could possibly get it from opening up a box, you know?
And that's the thing, is it's not food if you don't make it, sort of, you know? It's like one of those...
It really isn't
food. You know, I mean, it's food, and it's edible, and you can eat it, but it doesn't have, like, that lifespan. It doesn't have a story. It doesn't have, you know, the personal touches or the techniques that, you know, you would use versus somebody like Daniel Ballou or something like that. What's inspiring you right now? Like, what are you reading? What are you looking at? What is sort of infesting your mind in the world of food?
Root to stem, or root to flower, or root to seed. Is that the right word? Is that the right movement?
Sure. All of the above sounded great.
We have taken pigs apart and put them back together again in as many different ways as possible, and I still love that. I get off on it. But the new bit of things that's intriguing me is, give me this plant. How am I going to extract as much flavor and as much texture out of this plant as possible? Can I look at the seeds? Can I look at the commonly part? What happens if we shave the stem down? Is it edible, or does it taste like a styrofoam packing peanut? By the way, sunflower stalks do taste like a styrofoam. They also have the texture of a styrofoam packing peanut. Don't try to eat the roots of a sunflower.
It here first.
But, you know, what can
but
we...
But the heads are delicious.
The heads are delicious. The petals are delicious. The seeds, we all know, are delicious. But, you know, just investigating the entirety of anything, whether it be animal, vegetable, or mineral, and trying to just, how can we coax out its flavor? How can we bring a completely different experience from something that was formerly mundane?
Right, I like that. And I like that you talked about pigs first, because, you know, fucking bacon, it's everywhere. It's like, I feel like any cooking show, it's like, who put bacon on it? He's the winner. Winner. Bacon. And pork is such a big part of being a chef. It's a part of the culture. I mean, I think it's more American than beef ever will be. I mean, pork, dried pork, hams, built this country.
13 pigs.
Yeah. But then to take that mentality of like this tip to tail, you know, full butcher, how are we going to use the whole animal and applying it to everything and looking at seeds and plants. I just started following you on Facebook and Instagram, but there was a stream of photos that you did on social media of you butchering, for lack of a better word, a palm tree.
That was badass.
It looked like a lot of fun and also like a pain in the ass.
And it was really scary because the whole time I'm taking all the photos and I'm just waiting for that like chainsaw to just take off his leg.
Let's just add that it was the middle of July in Florida.
Right.
In the
AKA Swamp Planet.
Heat on the Swamp Planet. That was just, people used to do that as a means of getting food to survive. I was harvesting swamp cabbage.
Well, and it's a cool story how that all came to be, too, because I was actually in a grocery store picking up some stuff, and a neighbor who lived down the street from us said, hey, you're Michelle Baker, you're Chef Greg's wife. Do you think he would be interested in some swamp cabbage? And I was like, yeah, it's swamp and it's cabbage. He's all about that. And so, unbeknownst to me, I set him up to literally go do landscaping on this woman's yard.
Yeah, it was.
Who just so happened to know that it was a sable palm.
Sable palm.
Yeah, the sable palm holds that beautiful palm heart. And Greg was so excited to go out there and do it, but that's how all that went down. And
so I ran over with the truck, and I've got rope, and I've got a chainsaw, and I've got a machete, and I've got an axe, and I've got a pocket knife, and every one of these tools was used to extract the heart out of that palm.
So did that heart, the swamp cabbage, did that end up on the refinery's menu, or did that end up in your home fridge?
That wound up on the refinery's menu. I pushed my staff to say, here's something you've never worked with before. Do it. Figure it out. Just go. And they looked at me and went, we can shave some on some salad. And I said, no.
You're doing it wrong. Try again.
Let's try this again. Let's go back and look at how this was traditionally prepared. And okay. And then the wheels started turning and people started getting excited about it. And we still didn't manage to use it all before it went bad. That was a big, big heart.
It was huge. I didn't realize how much of a heart they have. Jeez.
Palm hearts. Palm big hearts. Those palms.
Big hearts.
The last thing is that touches on like sort of the staff and like presenting them with this thing. Like, hey, work with this. How much do you feel that you just sort of like open the door for them, and how much is like, here's the door, now we're going to walk through it, now we're going to go, you know, like, how much are you leading and how much are you just presenting the opportunity for them to be creative and them to expand themselves and ask questions from somebody who's done it before?
I'm actually trying to change my management style a little bit from leading people through the door to, is there a door here?
Mm.
Can you find one? And I want people to, you know, that act of discovery that people perform on their own is always going to be much more significant than being led to something. And, you know, it's my sincere hope that I can let people poke around and, okay, you're in a room and it's got walls. And look at, you know, what are you going to do now? You know, the first computer games of, you know.
Right. No, I love that mentality.
And, you know, as time goes on, I'm watching people realize more and actualize more and deliver more. And you know, I think that's a far better learning tool than teaching tool than anything I've come across previously.
Absolutely. And I think it's a perfect place to end for the day, although we could sit here for hours and hours. If you guys are down in Florida, you should go to Tampa. You should go to the refinery. You should keep your eyes peeled for fodder and shine. You should follow these guys on Facebook and Instagram. You should listen to heritageradionetwork.org. You should go on there and donate because we're a non-for-profit. This has been Eddie Schumard, special community session with my good friends Michelle and Greg Baker of the refinery. Thanks so much for being on, guys.
Hey, y'all.
Thank you, Eddie. We love you.
Peace. Nothing left to hide.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.